From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for the week ending the 7th of September. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio and the California Report. We're here in our studios across the street from the state capitol. A yawning Anthony York, editor of Capitol Weekly. You've been burning the midnight oil. You're up too late.
Something, right? All these late night floor sessions.
Right. You've been there every time, right?
Of course.
You're always there.
And in spirit.
In spirit. And Laura Kurtzman, political writer for the Associated Press. We dragged her back in. She was very gracious.
Well, thank you.
We must not have run you off too bad last week.
No, thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime. So, lots of things going on. 14 million things, it seems like, is going on. Rather than try to go through the flotsam and jetsam of about, what, several hundred bills that are moving their way through at this point, let's talk about some of the larger things. But let's talk about health care to start off with. Because even though health care still is very much in flux, I think everyone would agree it is it's the big enchilada. It is the big issue that's being negotiated. And developments on several fronts this week, probably most notably, though someone will take issue with the fact that I'm saying this is most notably, but I don't know what you guys think. Most notably, one of the groups that was the most concerned about their financial input, the California Hospital Association and hospitals, have apparently signed off to tax themselves. Would you say that's the biggest development of the week, maybe, in healthcare?
Yeah, I guess it's the most, let's say, firm. Everything else is so squishy.
Right.
You know, the hospitals never really outright opposed it until actually they did oppose it a few days ago and now they're for it. But for the first 9 months or whatever of the negotiations on health care, actually, if you can even call them negotiations, let's just say for the first 9 months that the governor's plan sat out there with everyone tearing it apart, the hospitals were staying on the sidelines because the argument was that they were going to get more out of this deal than they would pay in. And you have to kind of understand Las Vegas economics to get it. But it's some kind of a – it's been described
Las
to me –
Las Vegas economics also are California state government.
Right.
But anyway.
It's been described to me as a money laundering scheme in which they would basically – they pay in a dollar, let's say, and then they get $2 back.
Sounds like a CCPOA contract.
Yeah, right.
But those are the opinions of Anthony York at Capitol Weekly.
Basically, the way it works, my basic understanding of this, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but there would be a 4% fee on hospitals.
Actually, that is no longer quite accurate. They have changed it to a fee on patient days, and it has to do with whether it's managed care or fee for service, and
you asked somebody to correct you.
No, that's good.
You need a PhD.
So let's
this was part of the governor's plan originally, was to raise the fees on hospitals, but that money would be used to increase the Medi-Cal reimbursements that hospitals receive, so they would be losing money on the front end. And
so, in other words, what happens is they get assessed somehow.
Basically, yeah, they're backfilling for the state. The state doesn't want to put more money into the Medi-Cal program to raise the rates. California has one of the lowest rates in the nation. It's a federal matching program, so if California puts in a dollar, the federal government puts in a dollar. Since everyone in California is so against taxes, the state doesn't want to put more money from the general fund. They're saying to the hospitals, look, you put it in, then we'll pass that along basically as a state contribution to this matching fund. We'll get another dollar back from the feds, and we'll give it all back to you.
We'll give that to you. And right. So in the long run, as the analysis, as we saw, what was about a week and a half ago now, this analysis that the California Hospital Association had that showed that the vast majority of hospitals, of private hospitals, would actually come out on the plus side out of this whole operation, that the money they would put in would be smaller than the money they would get back, with the exception of a few hospitals.
Kaiser, which loses like $119 million a year under this analysis.
But even so, Kaiser hasn't been opposed.
Most supportive. From the very beginning, they've supported the governor's plan because they see themselves as the good guys and they always support expansions of health coverage.
Well, and the reason Kaiser would not come out ahead on the back end is because they have they treat a very low percentage of Medi-Cal patients and uninsured. So, and that's where the money is made, is from these increased payments from treating
Medi-Cal. Let's just look at it as a global issue for a moment. This whole notion that a hospital tax fee assessment, whatever in the heck we want to call it, is theoretically okay with the hospital community. Now, doesn't that take a large element off the table or push people more toward a resolution or not?
Well, you would think, except then we have the Republicans saying, no way, we don't care what they want.
We don't care if they want to be taxed. We're not going to tax them.
That's right.
And we're
going to save them from themselves.
Which leads us to a ballot initiative is the only way to get it. Then, right.
Supposedly. But then that raises the question, who in the world is going to go out and you know, campaign for raising taxes? I mean, is Arnold going to do that after the campaign he just ran? It's almost comical.
I think he would. Because as he said all along in this debate, it's not a tax increase. It's erasing the hidden tax that Californians pay on health care.
It's all about positioning, in other words.
Yeah, although supposedly the talk around the ballot initiative is for a hospital tax, an employer mandate or tax, and a sales tax increase.
Right.
And now the sales tax increase was floated by businesses that were trying to avoid a business mandate, like retailers, for example. And now the negotiations include both of them.
Far be it from me to throw a kink in the works of just trying to be the average guy understanding this, but wouldn't that violate the single subject rule?
What, God knows.
Putting all of that in one omnibus proposal on the ballot?
Well, the single subject, I guess, is health care. Right?
Yeah, it's all funding for the same purpose. I don't know.
It violates the idea that we have a legislature that's supposed to hash these things out, right? Yeah. I mean, on a deeper level, I think a lot of people are opposed to the idea that we would do something as complicated as health care, which is just harder than almost anything on the ballot.
But we've done so many things that way. We've done education funding by the ballot with Prop 98. We've done, you know, property taxes and taxes through Prop 13. We've done...
I think this is bigger. This includes more moving parts.
You think so?
Yeah.
So
more players that are also likely to peel off and oppose it. I think the thinking, even people who kind of would be open to this idea seem to think that politically it's just unbelievably hard because it's so, even the hospitals yesterday were saying, well, if it doesn't suit our purposes, you know, we won't support it. Now they're saying, you know, that they will. But, you know, that everything is contingent on the groups getting what they want.
And isn't there also a danger, as I saw some of the early reports back out of this, in this proposal or in this offer or in this compromise, that apparently the way that it would work is that if the federal matching money went down at some point and there became less coming back in, the hospitals wouldn't have to be increased the assessment on them, so the state would have to make up the difference.
So there
is a potential there that the state would be on the hook for having to pay money if the feds told us to get lost.
Right. Actually, there's all kinds of potential for the state to be on the hook for money for health care. I mean, as long as health care, as the money coming in to fund it is not indexed to the cost increases in health care, there's going to be a gap because health care goes up at 2 to 3 times the rate of inflation every year.
But, I mean, you asked earlier whether this paves the way for some sort of solution.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a piece of it, but I think this fee, the hospital fee, is relatively a small portion of the overall funding for this thing. I mean, there's still... The core questions are still who's going to pay the bulk of it and who's going to be covered. Those are still the core questions in this debate.
And have we made any progress on those issues?
Well, it's hard to know what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, the way this was set up, where we were a couple of weeks ago at least, was the governor wanted hospitals and doctors to pay a piece of this, and then there would be a 4% payroll tax or fee or levy or whatever he's calling it. The Speaker and Senate Leader Don Parada's proposal, AB 8, has about a 7.5%, give or take, percent payroll tax. The bulk of the money and the burden would fall on the employers to pay. It's hard to know if there is going to be a ballot initiative, which the Speaker himself talked about last week. I think that's still going to be a core question. What percentage the payroll taxes, if this proposal from the Restaurants Association and small businesses of a sales tax, whether that's a part of the funding mix. These are all questions that are big, big questions that have not yet been resolved.
Well, and there's some other things that I find interesting. Like one of the things that you mentioned, Anthony, that I keep coming back to and trying to follow this is who's covered. And from what I can tell, talking to folks involved in the discussions and the negotiations, the Schwarzenegger administration still has not come off of this issue that everyone should have insurance and everyone has to have insurance. And that is an issue because, as we know, Democrats and their constituent groups and consumer groups have said until there's an affordable version of health care out there, you can't require everybody to have health insurance.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, that's still a sticking point. And then these issues of cost containment and are you really actually going to ever drive the cost down in health care are still out there. There were amendments to Speaker Nunez and Senator Parada's bill AB 8 this week. They kind of started going toward that. a special thanks to someone who listens to the podcast who helped walk me through it. He shall remain nameless for now. But, I mean, one particular, look, now everybody's like, who was that?
Does he share the same first name as somebody on this podcast?
Perhaps.
Okay.
See, now,
or she.
Totally lets it out of the bag. But I had to have somebody walk through to understand why it was a good deal for groups who have been aligned with Speaker Nunez and Senator Parada. And we're talking. It basically creates a commission that would start to look at issues of cost that would require more transparency in exactly what healthcare providers pay for and what they charge and where the money goes. And it does seem to kind of somewhat get at those issues of, like, setting the stage for dealing with costs. So yeah. there were a lot of developments, but they are, in my feeling, they were all smaller developments that still haven't gelled somehow.
Right. And also to give you an indication of just how hard it is to do cost containment, the hospitals immediately came out against that.
Right. And that's got to be pivotal to this. I mean, you know, when you're talking about mandating something without any controls on cost containment, you know, my mind immediately goes to energy and what we did with deregulating the energy market in this state. And I'm sure that the parallel is not a perfect one, but where you have sort of half of a regulated market where one side is regulated and the other half is not, you run into big, big problems. I mean, we've seen that before, where one side is allowed to manipulate market forces or control market forces, and the other side is powerless to do anything about it and is mandated by law to pay.
And what a shocker. Energy deregulation happened in the very last hours of a legislative session.
But not on the ballot.
But not on the ballot.
That was right. A unanimous vote of the state legislature, let the record show.
Yeah, so. This won't be unanimous for sure.
No.
But it's interesting, even somebody like Sheila Kuehl, head of the Senate Health Committee, is saying exactly what you just said.
Democrat from Santa Monica.
Right. So it's interesting on the cost containment thing. You see it on the left and you see it on the right, these concerns that consumer advocates are saying this is going to really hit working poor people. You know, what are they going to do, pay skyrocketing premiums every month? Right now they have an out, which is to opt out of the system as long as they're healthy. They don't really need to pay for health insurance. But why, if it's going to go up and up and up and they're going to be paying for it and they're not sick and they don't need it, why should they do this? And the same for small businesses. They make the same argument. And it's interesting that you see that both the Republican legislators saying the same thing as the left-wing consumer advocates.
So two questions then on healthcare in the broad spectrum. One, are we going to special session on this?
Looks like it.
Probably. I mean, it's just for show,
it seems awfully hard to get something done in these extreme waning hours of the session,
yeah.
Does it not?
Well,
yes, the latest word was that even the Assembly might adjourn today and just wait to be called back into special session by the governor.
If you listen to this weekend, you'll know the answer that we don't know to that. But okay, so special session looks likely to you on this.
I mean, the governor did cancel his trip to India. I mean, I think there are signs that that there may well be a special session.
And then my other question from your reporting perspectives, if you're a legislative Republican, are you just completely marginalized out of this discussion at this point? I mean, talking about going to the ballot and around anything that they would have to vote on about taxes, but are legislative Republicans, do they have any voice in this negotiation, or is this just completely majority Democrats and the governor and other stakeholders at this point?
Well, I think there is still some hope on the part of the governor, however delusional that might be, that he could get some Republican support. And especially now that the Hospital Association has come out and said, okay, tax us. So they think that they can go to Republicans who have hospitals in their districts that supposedly are clamoring to be taxed. I don't know.
Well, and it's the same thing. I mean, what you're seeing now with – it's interesting to see this interplay between traditionally Republican groups, Republican constituencies, whether it's the Restaurants Association or the small businesses, and now the hospitals. I don't know if they fit neatly into a traditionally Republican group or not, but that a lot of the interests that Republicans are talking about wanting to protect, the business interests and the people that they're speaking for in expressing their reluctance to voting for tax increases for these things, are now slowly coming on board in support of something. I don't know whether that will have the impact of moving Republican legislators or not,
who was it, the Louisiana legislator, don't tax you, don't tax me, tax that other feller behind the tree. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thinking behind the sales tax,
Right.
Especially for people who sell food, like the restaurants. I mean, restaurant food isn't taxed, right? Restaurants are, but food like Safeway, for example, they're you know, they could get behind a sales tax and it wouldn't do anything to them.
It's right? A lot of interesting dynamics to it, seems like.
Yeah, but I mean, but with all these people talking about so many different ideas, it does make you think there might be a compromise funding mechanism possible, especially if we're going to go to the ballot.
Something for everyone to love and hate.
Yep.
I guess.
Politics
so.
At its best.
Well, let's talk about another topic. Topic two, something that our good friend Anthony York spent
far too much
hours time. And hours and hours on. I mean, it was like a soap opera, and you were there chronicling every
with math. A soap opera with math.
Soap opera with math. What we're talking about is the back and forth over the term limits initiative that's now going to be on the February ballot. The
yes.
initiative to modify term limits to change total legislative time from 14 years to 12 years, but all 12 years could be served in one house and not necessarily anymore split up between two chambers as they've always required to do. And it would also extend the times in office of Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez and Senate President Pro Tem Don Parada. That was my boilerplate intro, so you didn't
Pretty
have to
good.
Do it.
Pretty
so
good.
Where we last left off on our last podcast, there was some angst about whether it was going to qualify, whether there were enough signatures. What happened?
This angst continued through the weekend, and then by Tuesday, well, for a time, it looked as if the measure was not going to qualify because the percentage of valid signatures coming in from Los Angeles County was so low. It was in the low 60s in terms of percentage. And then magically, we had four counties revise their signature tallies, and it put it over, ended up putting it over the top by what amounted to less than one signature. That's the short version without going into sampling, 3% sampling, 110% needed of the total, all these arcane
And let's make
things,
sure people but, understand that it wasn't technically one signature that put it over, but it's this strange arcane formula where a duplicate signature is a penalty to the signature gatherers of,
right.
what, 1,000 signatures? Or
in large
like that?
Counties, it's a percentage, but it's in large counties, it's about 1,000 signatures.
So when you started, because it actually qualified by what, 900?
957,
right.
I believe.
Right. So when you do this crazy formula, it amounted to one signature.
By eliminating one duplicate signature in Riverside County, or there were four counties that between them eliminated five duplicate signatures, and that provided the margin for this thing to qualify for the February ballot.
That large rush of wind you heard at the state capitol this week was this collective sigh of relief from the Democrats who have been pushing this. Speaker Fabian Nunez and his political team, I mean, who clearly, you know, though there was a lot of public statements about, oh, the people who think this aren't going to qualify are being doom and gloom for no good reason, you know they were biting their fingernails watching it. And there was how much anger is there from the opposition? I mean, the opposition's been beating their chest a lot about maybe going to court and challenging this. What's your sense of it, Anthony?
Yeah, my sense is that, you know, judges are very reluctant. Now that this thing is qualified for the ballot, judges typically are very deferential to that. They're not about to throw something off the ballot because of an erased duplicate signature. I think that if there was going to be any chance to stop this, it would have happened last week, and I think that the opponents are going to have to just make their case to the voters in February.
We'll talk about term limits a lot on this podcast as we go through the fall. Obviously, we will beat it to death, I'm sure. So
yes.
lucky
yes.
for our eight listeners.
Yes.
But is it fair to say, either one of you, Laura, what do you think? I mean, does this in the final analysis, does term limits modification live and die with Arnold Schwarzenegger's position, or is that too dramatic?
Oh, I think it's really important. Yeah, if he comes out against it, it's dead. I'm not sure he would actually campaign for it, but maybe he would as a part of a package of political reforms. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think he's very important.
Yeah. Do you think that's the case? I mean, that seems to be what people think. Is that?
Yeah, I don't know that his support necessarily guarantees victory either. I mean,
but the converse could be true, could it not? Maybe not his support guarantees victory, but his opposition could ensure defeat.
Yeah, it's a tough case to make. Look, the proponents of this measure are going to have a lot of money. They're going to be able to outspend the opponents of it, I'm sure, 10 to 1 at least. There have been efforts to tweak term limits laws in the past that haven't succeeded. But
and you know, the last time they tried to do it, I think the opposition was outspent 10 to 1 and they still won.
Right. I mean, now this is a different proposal, and one of the things proponents have working in their favor is the description that will appear on the ballot makes it look as if it's a shortening of term limits.
Which it is in some ways.
In some ways, but not in others.
Right.
Not for Don Parada, you know, who gets an extra 4 years in office, and Dick Ackerman, who gets an extra 4 years in office.
And that's one of the tough parts I find about talking about this initiative is that you know, both sides will say, well, the initiative does X, and then the other side will say, well, the initiative does Y. Well, actually, they're both right. I mean, it does shorten time in office in one way, and it does extend time in office for another group of lawmakers. I mean, it is the ultimate in two true statements. I mean, it's not like a reporter normally goes out and says, oh, well, clearly one person's wrong and one person's wrong. No, I mean, they're both right.
And there will be confusion. There'll be confusion about this. I mean, I do think that some of what you're seeing, some opinion polls are showing that the measure is running above 50%. And I think that some of that support is coming from people who believe that this measure is a punitive one, one that punishes the incumbents, when in fact it's being offered up by the incumbents. They're the ones pushing for it. So, you know, whether the opponents have the money to break through in a presidential election cycle, whether they have the money to break through with that message and make that clear to voters, it's going to be tough, I think.
And I think one of the things I find fascinating about this, too, is that it may not be the only government reform issue on the ballot. I mean, there has been a lot of talk in the last couple of days that there is real movement on redistricting and that there are some compromises in the works, this whole notion of drawing political maps, and that perhaps even, I mean, one of the most interesting ideas, and the reporters in this room know it, for those of you who are listening, is that one key issue for certain Democrats has been they don't want to tinker with the way congressional districts are drawn because they're in the majority in Washington, D.C. now, and they don't want an independent commission to draw congressional districts in California yet. And there was talk earlier this week that a compromise might be that a proposal would create an independent redistricting commission with a one-time exemption for congressional districts. And so congressional districts would not be drawn by that independent commission for the first time in the first census redraw, and then after that they would. And that could be a possible compromise. So, I mean, clearly there's movement. There are things going on. And this gets back to the Arnold Schwarzenegger position on term limits, I think, because the governor has said all along if he got redistricting and he got redistricting reform on the ballot, he would consider term limits, right?
That's right. Yeah, he wants a whole package. Redistricting and then some other political reforms, allegedly. So
You'd have to wonder, though, if he got redistricting, would he still demand campaign finance reform or something like that? Or would he declare victory? I mean, it's a tall order.
It would be a pretty significant victory, I think, to declare. So,
especially since it looked like the Republicans had no shot at changing the redistricting because the Democrats control both houses, plus they're favored to win the governorship next time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Jerry Brown juggernaut.
And a final topic quickly, one more initiative that is circulating, and we don't know what to do. We don't really know what to make about it quite yet, but it was an interesting week for it, and that's the initiative that has been circulated by Republicans and a well-known Republican attorney who's done work for the governor and done work for other Republicans around the country, his law firm, which would change the way California electoral votes are handed out for the next race for president and would no longer let California electoral votes be winner-take-all, but would be awarded by congressional districts. So Republicans could win 20, 22 of California's electoral votes, which is as many votes as they get in Ohio, and this has gotten a huge amount of national attention. I mean, I can't not turn on national television or open The New Yorker or another national publication, and it's out there. The Associated Press probably helps with that.
Yes.
But this week it got cleared for title and summary by the Attorney General. It got a title and summary issued. The initiative can now hit the streets. I'm told it's going to hit the streets next week, but we still don't know who's financing it and how that's going to play out. But the Democrats are jumping up and down saying they're going to fight this one. Howard Dean having a conference call with reporters this week, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, saying they're going to spend whatever it takes to fight it. It's a dirty trick. It's right. Republicans try to steal an election.
They're trying to kill it before it's even born.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is clearly a big political debate and a fascinating thing for people who watch politics. But beyond that yet, we don't really know where it's going. And we don't know, as I said, we don't know who's got money behind it.
But it almost doesn't matter. All you need, if the proponents of this measure spend $1 million to qualify this thing for the ballot, they're going to force Democrats nationally to spend $10, $15, $20 million to ensure its defeat. And maybe that may be all this is about, is just getting it on the ballot and forcing Democrats to spend down some resources. $20 million in California, where they normally don't spend any money. I think that is part of the calculation as we head into 2008. And in a competitive election year, not only for president, but also for U.S. Senate and Congress.
And I think that, go ahead.
Well, on the other hand, I think the Democrats are trying to, as they would say, educate people about this measure early on so that they don't see it as a kind of a good government thing, because it sounds like a good idea. If you think of California as separate from the nation, their argument would be, but this is a power grab, a way to steal the election. And I think what they're trying to do is early on get the mindset in California to think of it in terms of a power grab as opposed to a logical way to conduct an election.
Yeah, it's all about controlling that original narrative of exactly what's going on. Because as I wrote in a story, I reported on it this week, that after the debacle of 2000, the people who were clamoring the loudest for change in the way we elect presidents were Democrats. And yet it's Republicans who are now proposing a change, and the Democrats who are ones who are unhappy with it.
Well, and Democrats are pushing a similar measure in North Carolina, which traditionally a Republican state, well, at least recently.
And I can't help but to mention a couple of other things that I find interesting. This would, if it got on the ballot, it would be on the June 2008 ballot, which is only a primary for legislative congressional seats. The big show of 2008 up to that point will have already happened, which is the presidential primary in February.
That means we'll probably have more listeners to our podcast than people that will actually turn out to the polls in June of 2008.
But June 2008 could be a low turnout. Turnout typically favors Republicans. There's this theory that that's a reason you put it on the ballot then. And let's not forget, that's only 5 months before the general election where we elect a president. I mean, and what a dramatic change in the whole national race for president would happen if California in June decides to split the way it awards electoral votes. It would have to change the strategy of national campaigns. They'd have to reconfigure how they treat California and how they treat their map of where they campaign, would it not?
Yes, it would. And it would. And if the Democrats have any hope of defeating it in June, they'd also have to have a huge get out the vote effort then, when otherwise they'd be saving their resources for November.
Yeah. So a lot of interesting dynamics, also known as good gainful employment for the few reporters that are left covering politics and policy.
Do we have a quorum here at the Capitol Press Corps?
Almost. We're a dwindling few. We even lost our pro bono political correspondent.
Yeah. We did.
Yes. She went to the dark side, if she's listening. Oh. We'll have to tell those of you who have no idea what we're talking about. Don't worry. We'll email me. I'll tell you what's going on. That'll do it for this podcast. For Laura Kurtzman from the Associated Press and Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. We'll see you next time.